Andy's Android, an adventure in four parts. Episode 1. So far, it had been a perfectly ordinary morning for the new postman. It stopped outside number 32 Grosvenor Road and rooted through the contents of his trolley until he found a parcel no bigger than the sort of box you might expect to find a tube of toothpaste in. He turned to open the gate and stepped gingerly through into the front garden. Pausing only to admire the roses, he raised his hand to knock at the front door, when a small video camera swung down from the top of the porch and shone a light directly into his face. Somebody, somewhere, was watching him.
"Please identify yourself,"
said a voice. It's the postman."
"Please state the nature of your visit."
I have a parcel for Andrew Miles." Andrew Miles sat in his bedroom, munching toast and scrutinising the image on his computer screen. "You're not our usual postman," he said.
No,
said the postman from the speaker, his lower lip trembling.
Derek's on holiday."
Andrew studied the heart rate monitor which pulsed in the corner of the screen and zoomed in closer on the postman's eyes. "Where's he gone?" he said.
Benidorm,
replied the postman. Andrew was satisfied he was telling the truth. Chewing through the remains of his toast, he dashed from his bedroom, jumped down all 14 stairs to the hall, and flung open the front door. Grabbing the package, he let out a cheerful "Thanks!" inadvertently showering the postman with crumbs. As Andrew turned back inside, the door slammed shut, and the video camera rose back into its box in the porch roof. With a deep breath, the postman turned and sprinted to freedom, his bottom lip still quivering as he reached the safety of his trolley. "How did you sleep, Grandad?" Downstairs, at the breakfast table, Andrew's mum, Gillian, was pouring the tea.
Not so well, actually," said Grandad through a mouthful of porridge. "Those mice kept me awake."
"Dad, we have not got mice," said Martin Miles from behind his newspaper.
"Well, I ended up sleeping with the pillow over my head."
Gillian was about to say how sorry she was that she'd asked, when Andrew breezed into the kitchen. "Morning, Andrew," said Gillian. "What did the postman bring you?" "Nothing," he said, defensively. "Andrew," said Martin from the head of the table, "we've got enough of your ridiculous gadgets around the house."
"It's good the boy has a hobby," said Grandad. "Leave him alone."
"He's as bad as you with his harebrained ideas," said Martin. Andrew was more than a little hurt. "They're not harebrained," he declared, wiping the moustache of milk from his upper lip with his sleeve. "All right, everybody," said Gillian at last, unable to contain herself. "That's enough. Martin, it's time for you to leave for work. Andrew, go and brush your teeth. And make sure you switch off all your alarms and gadgets before we go."
Carbon dioxide is a colourless, odourless and slightly acid-tasting gas.
Mr. Hughes had to be the most boring teacher in the school, thought Andrew. And chemistry had to be the most boring lesson.
"It consists of one atom of carbon joined to two atoms of oxygen."
Andrew sighed and turned to whisper to his best friend, Terry Worsthorne. Always the conscientious sort, Terry was busy making notes.
"Not now, Andrew. This is important," he said. "How can it be important?" said Andrew. "It's chemistry."
"But it might be in the test."
Regardless, Andrew continued.
"I got a parcel this morning. The discombobulator."
Terry's pen dropped to the desk.
"How did you get hold of that?"
"Mail order," said Andrew proudly. "I found the address on the internet."
He leaned closer to his friend.
"Tonight's the night, okay?"
"Andrew Miles, are you listening?"
shouted Mr. Hughes from the blackboard.
Yes, sir," he lied. "Then perhaps you can tell us, is carbon dioxide soluble in water?"
Clutching at straws, Andrew looked around the room for inspiration. There, in the second row, sat Daphne Patterson, her curls bouncing as she ever so gently shook her head.
No, sir," said Andrew emphatically.
The class laughed as Mr. Hughes turned to the board and pointed to a list of properties he had written there. Andrew could plainly see the words, "soluble in water."
"Perhaps some lines might improve your eyesight," droned Mr. Hughes. I must not talk through the most exciting class at school. 200 should suffice.
Andrew groaned and turned to scowl at Daphne Patterson. But she just laughed and looked away. Back at home, Grandad was watching the cartoons. As he chuckled quietly to himself, his gaze was suddenly drawn to the window in the street beyond. There, parked on the other side of the road, was a long black limousine with smoked glass windows. After a while, Grandad turned his attention back to the television. But one thing perplexed him. The mysterious car had no number plate. Later, in the playground, Andrew and Terry sat on a bench munching crisps. Andrew was in a mournful mood. She meant to give me the wrong answer, he said. Oh, come on, it was written on the blackboard, replied Terry wearily. Sandwich? No thanks, said Andrew. With a shrug, Terry tucked in. So, tonight's the night, he said through a mouthful. Yes, replied Andrew, suddenly perkier. Now I've got the discombobulator, everything's ready. What time shall I come round? Andrew thought. Shall we say midnight, outside the shed? Midnight it is, said Terry. That'll give me time to revise for the chemistry test tomorrow. Oh, don't remind me. Andrew was suddenly downcast again. If it wasn't for Daphne Patterson, I'd have time too. Terry cleared his throat. Look, Daphne Patterson is the cleverest girl in the school, clever enough to know that you like her. She's playing with you. You'll soon learn, he said wisely, that women are a strange bunch. At least, that's what my dad says. And what does he know? Said a voice from behind them. It was Daphne Patterson. There's nothing strange about me, I'll have you know. Oh, hi, Andy. She looked idly about her. So, what's a discombobulator? A what? He spluttered. I heard everything you said, you know. Midnight, was it? Andrew and Terry shared a worried look. Look, said Terry bravely, we don't know what you're talking about. Suddenly, a shout cut short their conversation. Andrew and Terry might have been relieved if it wasn't Michael Murray.
Oi, Miles, got the money you owe me?
Michael took a notebook from his pocket and opened it rather dramatically.
Andrew Miles, he read. 1 week's pocket money.
Daphne swung round. Michael Murray, still picking on poor defenceless animals? And his name's Andy. Actually, it's Andrew, said Andrew, rather feebly.
I know it's Andrew, but I call you Miles, don't I, Miles? Laughed Michael.
And what if he doesn't pay? Asked Daphne. There was a hush as Michael leaned in closer.
A fate worse than death, he said.
Daphne laughed. A fate worse than death? You mean worse than being seen shopping with your mum? Michael was suddenly wary.
Eh? He said.
Now it was Daphne's turn to move in closer. Does Johnson's department store mean anything to you?
Might do, stammered Michael.
Andrew was confused. Daphne, he began, what are you...
She stopped him with a wave of her hand.
Last Saturday, she continued, I was walking through Johnson's department store when who do you think I saw? Michael Murray was turning a rather peculiar shade of red and looking distinctly uncomfortable. In the boys' wear section, Daphne continued, with his mum.
Look, Miles, Michael began.
Andrew, forget the money.
It was you, wasn't it, Michael Murray, sneered Daphne, as Michael scratched at the notebook with a pencil. Look, he said, I'm crossing it out, see? We're evens. Your mum was buying you pants, wasn't she? Daphne was moving in for the kill.
With fluffy squirrels on,
she concluded in triumph. Michael Murray was now the colour of a pickled beetroot.
You haven't heard the last of this, Miles, he shouted.
With a look of rage, he turned and stormed off through the playground, muttering wildly to himself.
Thanks, Daphne, said Andrew. I don't know if that was brave or stupid.
How could it be stupid, she said, twirling a ringlet of hair round her fingers. I'm the cleverest girl in the school, remember?
You're sure that's the house?
Asked Mr. Hest as he stared through the smoked glass window of his limousine.
That's it, Mr. Hest.
Well, well. And who is it addressed to?
The postman thought.
Miles. Yes, that's it. Andrew Miles.
Andrew Miles. Interesting.
Do you know what was in the package? Asked the postman. Hest allowed himself a little snigger.
Oh, yes. We have friends in many places. A quick look here, a sneaky peek there. We know what was in the package, don't we, Drongo?
The postman looked towards the driver's seat. There sat Drongo, Mr. Hest's personal driver. He reminded the postman of a silver-backed gorilla, only bigger and hairier, and not quite so intelligent.
Yes, Mr. Hest, he said.
A discombobulator.
Hest rolled the word around his tongue as if it were a boiled sweet. A what? Asked the postman.
The last piece of the jigsaw, the final component, said Hest.
And what does that mean? Mr. Hest leaned forward in his seat.
It means that we have to watch Andrew Miles very, very carefully.
It takes a lot to wake Grandad in the afternoon. But Mr. Hest managed it. When Grandad finally came to the door, he was still screaming,
Come on! I know you're in there!
Can I help you?
Asked Grandad, who suspected the chap was lost. Hest cleared his throat.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to disturb you. Are you Mr. Miles?
Yes, one of them.
Marvellous. I wonder, are you by any chance related to Andrew?
So, he wasn't lost after all.
Yes. Why, who are you?
Hest handed Grandad a business card.
Forgive me. My name is Hest. Maximilian Hest.
Institute for Scientific Advancement, read Grandad, peering at the card down his nose. Robotics Division. Well, what do you want from Andrew?
Frankly, said Hest, lighting a cigar, his advice.
Advice?
Wheezed Grandad through a cloud of noxious smoke that threatened to envelop him.
Indeed, continued Hest, oblivious. We at the Institute are a little stuck on a problem. We were wondering if perhaps he would give us the benefit of his wisdom.
Well, I don't know about that. He is only 11, you know.
Look! Just pass on my card and ask him to call.
Yes, of course, Mr.
Grandad squinted at the card again.
Nest?
Hest could barely control himself.
It's Hest!
He turned away, muttering darkly to himself.
What a nice man,
thought Grandad as he shut the door. He padded back into the living room and flopped down into his chair.
Now, where was I? Ah, yes.
For the first time all afternoon, Mr. Hest had opened a window. The postman took grateful gulps of fresh air. Hest was on his sixth cigar now, and the whole of the car seemed thick with cloying acrid smoke. Through the window, the postman's eye was drawn to the bus stop. There, stepping off the number 52, was Andrew Miles.
That's him, he said. That's the boy.
Hest leaned forward to get a better view.
So, that's Andrew Miles. Remarkable. That insignificant, pimply wimp of a snivelling little boy has achieved something in his short life where even the greatest minds have failed. I have wrestled with this conundrum for more years than I care to remember, and then he...
Hest stabbed a finger towards Andrew, who was now approaching the gate to his home.
He comes along and solves it as if it were...
He stopped for a moment. The postman was almost sure he could see a tear in his eye.
Child's play.
I'm sorry, said the postman, somewhat alarmed. I have absolutely no idea what you're talking about.
Of course not. How could you? You're just a postman. Where is he, believe it or not?
Again, Hest pointed to Andrew.
He is a genius. If he has a discombobulator, as we believe, he must be very close.
To what exactly? Asked the postman in all innocence. Hest raised his eyes to the ceiling.
You really are rather stupid, aren't you? Drongo,
he said to his driver.
I've seen enough. Drive on.
Drongo placed a hairy hand on the wheel and started the car.
Yes, Mr. Est, he grunted.
As for Andrew Miles, said Hest, taking a final look out of the window, I do hope he sees sense. I'd hate for anything nasty to happen to such a clever little boy.
Then, much to the postman's horror, he wound up the window.
By the way, Andrew, said Grandad at the dinner table, some chap called for you today. Told me to give you this.
Finishing off the last of his chopped liver, he reached into the breast pocket of his shirt and pulled out a business card.
Mr. Hest or something.
Intrigued, Andrew read, Institute for Scientific Advancement, Robotics Division. What did he want?
I thought you could help him out with some problem or other, said Grandad,
mopping up his gravy with a slice of brown bread.
The address is on the card.
Suddenly, Martin snatched the card from Andrew's hand.
I think you've got more important things to think about for the moment, young man, he said. Your chemistry test?
Not to mention 200 lines for Mr. Hughes, added Gillian. Andrew almost choked on his potato.
Don't look so surprised, said his mum. Did you really think I wouldn't get to hear about it?
Andrew pushed his empty plate to one side and sat back in his chair, resigned.
No, I suppose not.
He phoned this evening. Mr. Hughes is very worried about your progress, began Gillian. He says you never pay attention, that you're either always talking or daydreaming. While she was talking, Andrew kept half an eye on his father. Martin was putting the business card into his inside jacket pocket. He made a mental note.
He spends too much time in that shed playing with his toys, said Martin.
They're not toys. Well, whatever they are, said Gillian, I think you should spend a little less time down at the bottom of the garden and a little more time thinking about your schoolwork. Martin tried his best to look conciliatory.
Look, we're just asking for a little more effort, okay?
Okay, said Andrew. And we don't want to see you down in that shed for a while.
All right, said Andrew. I promise.
Martin returned to his dinner, happy in the knowledge that he had won the argument. Except that, under the table, Andrew had his fingers well and truly crossed. It was a clear, still night. The moon lit the way as Andrew walked carefully down the garden path. There, by the shed, stood a figure. Terry Worsthorne, just as they'd arranged. Terry was wearing his dressing gown and had the added benefit of a checked scarf to keep out the chill.
Did anyone hear you? He asked.
Andrew shook his head. I don't think so. And you?
Nah, Terry snorted. Dad's snoring his head off. Are you ready?
Ready? Said Andrew, producing a key from his dressing gown. It was attached to a piece of frayed string around his neck.
I can't wait.
With a cautious look around the garden, Andrew stepped up to the shed door. He inserted the key and gave it a quarter turn. It opened a small door in the wood, behind which was a miniature electronic computer console.
Please identify,
said a strange, impassive voice from a small speaker. Andrew placed his thumb to be scanned on a small pad in the console. Miles, Andrew, he said. There was a wait of a few seconds while the computer's systems whirred and clicked.
Enter,
said the voice finally as the door swung open.
Miles, Andrew? That sounds rather formal.
The two boys wheeled round with alarm. A young girl with curly hair stepped out of the darkness.
It's only me, she said. Patterson, Daphne.
Ignoring the look of shock on Andrew's face, she peered at the panel on the shed door.
Quite an impressive bit of kit you've got there. I'm beginning to see you in a whole new light.
Terry was the first to find his voice again.
What are you doing here?
Daphne twirled her hair as she stood in the moonlight.
My curiosity got the better of me. All that talk of midnight meetings and discombobulators.
Andrew was the second to find his voice again. You haven't told anyone else, have you? Daphne took a step back in mock horror.
Andy, I'm hurt, she said. But she soon recovered. So, what's in the shed?
Don't let her see, Andrew. Terry had positioned himself protectively by the door.
Don't let me see what?
Nothing, said Andrew quickly. Daphne fixed them both with a suspicious stare.
Look, Daphne, I can't let you in here. It's
It's top secret. I've got a very loud scream, you know. She took a step forward. And if you don't let me in, I'll use it. Andrew looked at Terry with resignation. They had no choice. All right, Andrew relented. But you mustn't mention any of this to anyone. Inside the shed, all was dark. Terry switched on the light. As Daphne looked around her, she couldn't help but gasp. On the walls and in every available space, there were shelves and racks lined with circuit boards, fuses, and strange electronic devices that Daphne didn't recognize. At the furthest end of the shed, there was a wooden chair and a workbench. Next to this stood a tall object, about the size of a standard lamp, protected from the dust and from view by a blanket. "It's a real home from home, isn't it?" said Daphne finally. "What do you do in here?" Andrew was reticent. He seemed to be hovering near the covered object by the workbench. "Stuff," he said. "Like what?" probed Daphne. "Well, I have a special project at the moment, but mainly just, well, you know, stuff." "I don't understand," said Daphne. "How come you're so smart at home, but so stupid at school?" Andrew sat at his workbench. "Chemistry, maths, history," he said. "What use is all that to me? School is boring." Daphne rolled her eyes. "You've just decided it's boring, that's all." "But in here," continued Andrew, oblivious, "sometimes I get so immersed in something a whole day can seem like an hour. It's amazing." "It's sad," said Daphne scornfully. Terry appealed to his friend. "I knew we shouldn't have let her in." "It's nothing to do with you anyway," snapped Daphne. "It's not your shed." "So, Andy, why all the secrecy?" Andrew thought for a moment, then came to a decision. "This," he said, and he nodded to the object in the corner. Terry took a breath. "Andrew, are you sure you should? Will you keep out of this, Terry Worthorn? Remember, Andy, I helped you out today. I saved you all your pocket money for a week. The least you can do is show me what's under the blanket." "Well," said Andrew, "I'll scream." Terry was pushing Daphne to the door. "Andrew, perhaps we should just..." But before he could finish, Daphne lurched forwards towards the corner and pulled at the blanket. Terry lunged to restrain her as Andrew made a grab for it, trying desperately to keep the mysterious object hidden. But it was no use. Suddenly, the cover slipped through his hands. Daphne found herself caught off balance, and she fell backwards on top of Terry, the blanket falling to cover them both. Trying to save face through the chaos, Daphne struggled to her feet and straightened her dressing gown about her. "Now then," she said, "let's see what all the fuss is about." As she raised her eyes, she finally saw the object in front of her. There, looking back at her, was an exact replica of Andrew Miles. Predictably, Daphne screamed. Terry rushed to cup his hands over her mouth. "I knew we shouldn't have let her in. What if someone heard?" "I thought you were going to scream if we didn't show you," said Andrew. "Have you finished?" Daphne nodded and mumbled something through Terry's hand. He let her go. Slowly, cautiously, Daphne moved closer to the strange figure in the corner. Now she could see it was dressed in Andrew's school uniform. "What is it?" she panted. "A waxwork?" Andrew's voice had a note of pride in it as he answered, "It's an android." "And you made this?" asked Daphne, examining the figure minutely. "It's so lifelike." "Not so stupid now, am I?" "Does he work?" Andrew took a package from high up on a shelf. "Not yet," he said. "The discombobulator," exclaimed Terry. "I was expecting something much bigger." "What are you going to do with it?" asked Daphne. Andrew had opened the box to reveal a small device, about the size and shape of a spark plug. "Well, with Terry's help, I'm going to insert it into the android's cranium. His skull." Shocked though she was, Daphne was listening hard. "I know what a cranium is, thank you very much. I like biology, remember?" Andrew smiled for a moment, and then, suddenly, looked very serious indeed. "Terry, if you could open the cranial aperture, I think we're ready." Terry took a screwdriver from the workbench and put it to the android's head. Just beneath the hair, he located two screws and turned them slowly. That done, he lifted a flap in the android's head to reveal a small space, just the right shape and size, for a discombobulator. Andrew had pulled on a pair of surgical gloves. "Thank you. Right then.
The moment of truth. He carefully inserted the discombobulator and snapped the lid shut. The screws were replaced, and Terry and Daphne took a step back, watching expectantly. With the flicker of a smile playing on his lips, Andrew leant forward and with a gloved finger pressed the android's nose. There was an instant buzz of energy, and the android snapped to life. A light came to his eyes as he surveyed his surroundings, a puzzled expression on his face. It was uncanny. Daphne drew a sharp breath.
It's worked! It's worked! This is fantastic!
Andrew took a step towards his creation and looked him in the eye. Hello, he said. The android smiled benignly at the boy and recognized him instantly.
Miles, Andrew, it said, in Andrew's voice. Number 32, Grosvenor Road.
He turned his head.
Worsthorne, Terry, number 18, Heathfield Terrace.
He turned again.
Patterson, Daphne, number 23, Sutton Road.
He knows who I am, exclaimed Daphne.
The android blinked, as if a new thought had entered his robotic brain.
Question,
he said suddenly.
Who am I?
Daphne moved forwards to look him over again.
Who are you?
Well, I guess you're Andy's android.
Thank you.